Hello, and welcome to Strange New Picards. That's what we're calling this show now for the next few episodes. Formerly known as Picardcast. I'm your host, Rebecca. I am joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Brooke. Hi, Brooke.
Hi.
Strange New Picards. I think it works. I think it's a good mashup of the two things that we're doing right now.
Yes, I like it. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, we love to invent nicknames for our characters that we meet, you know, Dr. Borg, not Laris, you know. It's all good.
Dr. Borg is my favorite, though.
I love Dr. Borg, and I have not seen anybody else call her that, and we invented it, everybody, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm, don't mm-hmm steal our ideas, mm-hmm, Dr. Borg. But we are not here to talk about Picard, as much as we love Picard, but we're here to continue talking about Strange New Worlds. This is our episode 3 review, but we are joined by a wonderful guest, a good friend of both of us, and known to most of our listeners. We're joined by Brian from Pop Culture Leftovers. Hi, Brian.
Oh, wow. Hey, thank you for having me on the show. I'm looking forward to talking about Strange New Worlds.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on. I always enjoy talking to you in general, but always a treat to talk about Star Trek with you. I always think of you more as like a Star Wars guy, but I know you do have history with Trek. You've been on an episode of ours before of a personal log. So, yeah. So we're 3 episodes in. I mean, obviously we're not even halfway through, but like where we are 3 episodes in so far, what are you thinking about Strange New Worlds?
All right, here we go. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Let's see here. This, I mean, we're only 3 episodes into Strange New Worlds, and this, in my opinion, is the best Star Trek I've seen since probably, like, my love for Next Generation.
Okay.
And it might even surpass that. That's how good this show is.
Wow, that's high praise.
I'm not even kidding. It's like every episode, the writing is crisp. Everything that they're experiencing, it's not like this. I mean, it is. Like, they have their voyage, you know, they're you know, 5 years. I mean, but every episode is just like a different adventure, and that's what I like Star Trek to be, not like, you know what I mean? I like every episode to be like a new adventure, and not, I'm not big on big ongoing storylines in Star Trek. I like them to all kind of like come together in an organic way, but I do like them to be on brand new adventures every episode. And so far the show, 3 episodes in, has delivered big time.
No, absolutely. This format is, it's a return to that classic Star Trek format of every week is a new episode. You know, it's very different than what they've done with Discovery and Picard, whereas like every season there's an overarching story and each episode is part of that story. So none of it's like really a standalone episode, but these are definitely, it's a return to that classic TOS and TNG storytelling of like every week there's a new adventure as we go out exploring the galaxy. And I think a lot of Star Trek fans, both hardcore and casual, are enjoying this return to that storytelling format. I have to say for myself, I have enjoyed like what they've done with Discovery and with Picard, of course, but, I have to say I am also enjoying a return to a lighter Star Trek. This is definitely lighter than Discovery has been, and Picard for that matter. So, and each week it's a new planet, it's a new adventure. It feels familiar and comfortable, and it's a nice sort of comfort viewing. That's how I kind of look at this one too.
For me, it's like, you know, I enjoy Star Trek, but the long form storytelling with Picard and Discovery, I kind of couldn't really get into it as
sure
much as, yeah, like these one and done stories. I mean, there's still like character development and these, you know, character like side stories that'll surely hopefully come into play like later on down the road. But I'm loving this. This is like a return to Star Trek form for me.
Nice. Well, I'm happy to hear that. I'm excited to hear that. And I'm definitely excited to dive into this episode with you all. So yes, this is season one, episode three of Strange New Worlds, Ghosts of Illyria. Synopsis is, Una must confront a secret she's been hiding when a contagion ravages the ship, incapacitating the rest of the crew. This episode was written by Akilah Cooper, who also wrote four episodes of Luke Cage, a show that I know I think all of us watched when it was out. Also written by Bill Wolkoff, who wrote three episodes of Star Wars Rebels. So I'm getting our Star Wars reference in right in the beginning here today.
That's my job.
I know. I took your job today. I'm sorry, Brooke. But if there's other Star Wars references, please do. Please do. Or Doctor Who, for that matter.
Yeah, because as Brian was talking about the sort of, you know, every week, like, a new story sort of format and the difference between that and Picard, like, that's kind of, that's the thing that I love about this, because it's kind of like a new Doctor Who kind of style, where there's sort of, like, maybe, like, a thread that goes through the whole season, but there's different stories every week, because we know that Pike has got this vision, him, like, saving these people and being in a wheelchair and all that, so we have all of that, but, you know, it's not like, oh, he had this vision in the first episode, and then they're never going to go back to it, you know, like some things would do, but also it's not, I feel like we're not going to have the same level of, what did Gizmodo call it? It wasn't batshit crazy. Like, it was some sort of, like, how insane some of their, some of the episodes of Picard ended up being. And there were filler episodes and stuff, and it's just because they were trying too hard to tell a big story instead of, I feel like they could have zoomed in on the little stories that we're telling throughout the season, and it would have felt more like this kind of Trek. But instead, they wanted to tell the whole story in every episode. Anyway, that's
right.
That's all I have. So that was my Doctor Who reference. And
Brooke, I was just gonna say, Brooke, like your Doctor Who comparison. I was thinking that as I was watching these episodes, like, and that's what I love about Doctor Who. Every episode, it's just like, you never know where the doctor's going to show up,
right,
what time the doctor's going to show up. And that's what I love about this. It's so refreshing every week. I never know what the next kind of, like, big story is going to be and the next MacGuffin. I totally get Doctor Who out of this as well.
Yeah, I'm definitely, as you all know, I'm not I'm like a very casual Doctor Who fan / watcher of the series, but I do understand what you're saying, and I do agree. It definitely, Doctor Who does that same thing. Every week it's a brand new adventure, a new time, new thing the Doctor gets himself or herself into, and then has to somehow get out of it, and it definitely gets the Doctor Who vibe. I definitely appreciate that. This episode was directed by Leslie Hope. And our cast, we have our usual people. We've got Anson Mount as Captain Pike, Ethan Peck as Spock, Jess Bush as Christine Chapel, Christina Chong as Lan Noonien Singh, Celia Rose Gooding as Nyota Uhura. For me, so far, she has really been the standout in this series. Like, everybody's really good at doing their roles and playing their characters, but I don't know. There's something about her portrayal of Uhura that I absolutely love, and I think Nichelle Nichols would be so proud.
Right, she's been given what Uhura deserves.
Yes, and we talked about this in our episode two review, that in 5 minutes of an episode, Uhura got more backstory than we ever got on her in all her decades on the original series and the movies. So it's nice that they're giving us such a real fleshed out Uhura that we've really never seen before. And I think she's doing a fantastic job. We've got Melissa Navia as Lieutenant Erica Ortegas. Babs.
Also known as my also space known girlfriend. As
Brooke's space girlfriend. Yes, that is canon, by the way. Babs Olusanmukun as Dr. Mbenga. Rebecca Romaine as Una Chin Riley. Bruce Horak as Hammer. And Andre De Kim as Chief Kyle. So we start our episode with a first officer's log, not a captain's log, but a log, stardate 1224.3, which is March 23rd, 2324, at about 2:15 in the morning. Enterprise is arriving at Hematit 3, which is an abandoned Illyrian colony. The Illyrians, this is not their first appearance in Star Trek. They were referenced in an episode of Enterprise, which I have only watched that series one time through, so I kind of forgot that they were in Enterprise. They do genetic manipulation, so they are not part of the Federation, because the Federation has banned that for good, well, for seemingly good reason. They're investigating what's happening to the colony, but of course, an ion storm is quickly approaching. There's our sort of, there's the initial time frame for the episode. They've got to get this done and out before the ion storm hits. So the OA team's kind of spread out. Pike goes off to look for Spock. We get this quick scene with Ensign Lance, who I said he was the Wish.com version of Timothy Chalamet. And
I love that in the notes. It's like, you ask for Timothy Chalamet and you get Tim Chalamet.
There you go. No,
you get Timothy Chalamet. Shalalite.
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 100%. He looked like Timothy Chalamet, but like, you know, not quite. So
Timothy Chalamet, not so much.
Timothy Chalamet? So he's looking in some locker, and we get, like, this little cool effect. There's, like, some dots of light that seem to be, like, come towards him and, like, I guess go into his body with, like, an odd... It kind of sounded like a transporter was happening, which was odd. So some of the away team, they do try to beam up, but, of course, there is interference from the ion storm. Hemmer in engineering, he reroutes auxiliary power to the transporters, which will kick systems into the backup generator, like it's a hand crank generator on the Enterprise. And this is enough to bring up the landing party, leaving Spock and Pike down there. Spock,
can I talk about this?
Yeah,
real quick?
Of course. Go ahead.
It's such a simple thing. Like the transporter room, he's like, you know, I'm losing them, and then you know he reroutes the auxiliary power and they get this really quick shot, and it just kind of like it's a really quick shot of the hallway in the ship in the Enterprise, mm-hmm. and the lights flicker, and then the people continue walking. And it's like there are these major things that are going on within, you know, like the captain's, you know, the captain's deck and all this stuff, and like, but life just kind of goes on for the crew and like the people that just like are, you know, working in the Enterprise, like they. Mm-hmm. They just noticed that the lights flickered. Okay. But there's like these major things going on behind the scenes that they have no idea about. And I just really like that really quick shot of the people just walking down the halls, stopping for a moment as the lights flicker, and then going on about their day.
Just yeah. Like a slice of life or some it's, kind of thing.
Just it's like them. Not, it's like all these things unbeknownst to them. Like they have no idea of half the things that are going on in like on the ship. They're just going about their day. Like you got to imagine, like the janitor has no clue that they're going up against what they're going to be going up against right. at the moment. Yeah,
it's so true, because I mean, even the way like I described the scene, it's just like, oh yeah, I'll just reroute auxiliary power, no big deal. And yet to think about like the mechanics behind an action like that, you're rerouting power that would normally go one place to another place. The ship has a momentary, you know, blip while it switches over to the backup systems. I mean, it's and it's presented so nonchalantly, but it's a big deal.
Yeah.
On like this incredibly powerful starship, what they can do. Like in your everyday life, if you're at work and the lights flicker, you're like, whoa, what happened? Like we react more now with much simpler systems than the crew of the Enterprise does, because it's just an everyday thing. Yeah, it's just such like a nonchalant, oh yeah, this is just how technology works now. And it is a cool moment. I agree. So Spock and Pike are in like some kind of a library. Spock says he's got some new journals from the colony. He's going to read them when they get aboard the ship. They try to beam up as well, but the ion storm now is too close. It's too strong. It's not a power issue. It's that they cannot materialize them on the platform. And obviously, we all know what happens if you can't materialize somebody. It's not pretty. It's pretty gross. And so Una tells them to find shelter on the planet until they can get them back. And so they do that.
Unless you're Riker, yeah. And it makes a copy of yourself.
And then it makes a copy of you, yes. But I mean, yeah, that is true. You know, those crazy transporter accidents, it's either motion picture where something terrible happens to the people trying to beam on board, and then when they do go back to the starbase, they're like, "What we got back didn't live very long, fortunately." Or you create an entire other person.
None of them had the same beard that Riker had. That's what it was.
True.
That was his.
That
was his safety from turning into goo.
It's the beard. I mean, once he grew the beard, the show got better. I mean, that's just facts.
All around. Yeah.
Yes. It's just facts. Then we get our credits, and I cannot tell you, sort of talking about classic Trek and return to form, I cannot tell you how happy I get listening to the voiceover with the classic, "These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise." I fucking love it so much.
I have to watch it every single time.
Oh, yeah.
There's no skipping that.
I never fast forward it. You know that thing where it's like you're supposed to wash your hands like for a certain amount of time and they tell you to sing Happy Birthday twice? If you recite the opening to Star Trek, that is the same amount of time. So next time you're washing your hands,
that's amazing.
Just say the Star Trek thing about exploring new worlds and new civilizations, and you'll have clean hands, and you'll have affirmed your status as a Star Trek fan. PSA there. So Una goes on, gets to the bridge. She updates the crew what's going on, and she basically puts everybody, you know, she puts everybody on standby. Everybody be ready at a moment's notice to communicate with the captain, bring him on board. Like, as soon as we can get them back, we're going to do it. And then we get the only scene, I think, with Ortegas in the whole episode. She's walking down the hallway, and she finds Timothy Chalamet. He is stripped down in his underwear, and he is trying to get closer to the light source in the wall. And at first, she's like, "Hey, you do you, bro." Like, which is kind of a funny thing. Like, she's not like, "Why aren't you wearing any clothes?" But he's like, "I need the light. I need to feel it on my skin." And then he smashes his head against the glass. She pulls him back from doing it again. She's calling security.
Cindy watched until this part, and she was like, "You know what I've watched with you over these last couple of weeks has actually seemed pretty good. I might have to watch this show. I think this might be a good starting point for watching Star Trek." Because I kind of wanted to start watching Star Trek, but she's watched Next Generation with me, you know, just randomly if I were watching it or whatever. And, you know, didn't pay attention to Picard. But I said, "Well, you've got to see My Space Girlfriend." And so she was like, "No, I want to go before there are spoilers." And then she pops up in this scene and Cindy's like, okay. And then she's like, and then leaves.
I think this is a good show. Like, I think this is a good show for anyone to get into Star Trek, honestly. Like, because you don't really, like, yes, they do reference stuff from other shows, and there are, like, little subtle Easter eggs that, like, you may not get the full impact, but that's fine. There's a lot to love in this show, and I think for people who are looking to get into Star Trek, I think this is a good starting point to kind of watch this and then branch out from there and explore other shows and see other Star Trek stuff. So then we see Una in her quarters, and she also seems attracted to the light coming from the lamp in her quarters. She has the computer raise the illumination, And then she rips open her shirt to get more, like, light exposure. And I thought of this at the time when I watched it, and I saw other people talking about it online, of, like, a little kind of a funny little nod Easter egg to, like, how many times Kirk would get his shirt ripped open on the original series. And it definitely had that vibe when Kirk would, like, rip his shirt open or get it ripped off in a fight or whatever, which was kind of funny. Then she, like, does this thing where she glows red, like her hands, her chest, her face, she glows red. Red, like if you've seen Iron Man 3, she kind of looks like the stuff that was happening in Iron Man 3, which is not a good movie. I'm not saying this. She got a little Pepper Potts on us, and then it then fades away. So, I mean, clearly, I think we can see, I mean, even from very early on, you see, like, okay, there's obviously some kind of an infection, some kind of a something happening, because they, both of these people were on the away team and they've got these weird symptoms. So, you know, of course she calls down to sick bay, speaks to Dr. Mbenga. He tells her that some of the landing party are coming in with, like, odd symptoms. He asks her, how are you feeling? And she's like, oh, I'm fine, which is an interesting thing to say. And then he tells her to come down to sick bay to get checked out. So when you watch this episode for the first time, like, what were your thoughts on this? Like, what were your, did you have any thoughts or theories on what was going on with Una at this moment?
Yeah, I totally thought that, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff running through my mind. I was totally like, okay, why is she not telling him the truth? What is she hiding?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whatever that light was there something maybe now, like an, a darker presence inside of her, like, you know, when we watch, you know, movies like John Carpenter's The Thing, or when you, you know, Venom, the symbiote, like, mm-hmm. something is in your body and you don't want anybody else, like, this alien is in your body and you don't want anybody else to know because, like, you're the host and now the alien's taken over. I was thinking, like, what's going on here? Has she been... Mm-hmm. taken over by something, and why isn't she saying something? There's something sinister going on here. But as the episode kept going on and on and on, and she kept, and she didn't, like, have any of the symptoms, I'm thinking to myself, why is she kind of, like, exempt from, like, all these symptoms, and why is she not, what's so special about her that she's not in the sick bay? It wasn't adding up. And yeah, so, I mean, yeah, you're definitely theorizing about what's going on with her character in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Brooke, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of the same way, because it's just like, is this what happened to the other people when they, you know, because we didn't see what happened, like, to, you know, Timothy Chalamet, you know, we didn't see what happened to him before he, like, smashed his head. So he could have glowed, but then it's like she wasn't continuing with the, like, needing the light on her and stuff. So then it's just kind of like, there's something else going on here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd like told, you know, I didn't know what was happening, you know, like I mm-hmm. kind of liked that I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, my first thought was, is she hiding this because she doesn't want to? Because she's in command now while Pike is away or down on the planet. My first thought was, is she not saying that something happened because she doesn't want, because she wants to stay in command, like make sure that the ship functions the way it's supposed to? Is she just like trying to be like, I'll be fine. I just have to keep it all together so I can make sure the ship is running. Like, that was my first thought, if that was, you know, the case. But then there's scenes later on, like when she, and we'll talk about it, like when she picks up Hemmer from the transporter and just like he's nothing and like a sack of potatoes just like walks him down to sick bay. And I'm just like, okay, there's something. All right. Something else is happening here, obviously. Like, how is she this strong?
Right.
Did her like, you know, lava face give mm-hmm. her strength, or did right. she already have all that strength?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what? It was so funny. He was like a rag doll, just like
blur. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have that in my notes, Brooke, that she picked him up like a rag doll.
We're on the same wavelength.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Dr. Mbenga tells Una that people have burned and shocked themselves trying to get closer to light. And we see in sickbay, right, like they've got lamps over people, like shining right on their face, and it's the only thing that seems to calm them down. They've said that, well, there's no pathogen, there's no disease present, like the transporter would have filtered out anything. But he says the only thing they have in common is that their vitamin D level is dangerously low. And so he says, you know, Una's levels are normal, but he still wants to take a blood sample from Una, which he does. So then she goes down to consult with Hemmer, and, you know, he's basically just like, there's no way anything got through on the transporter. Like, the transporter filters out anything it doesn't recognize. So if it's not a matter of programming it differently, it's a matter of, like, if it sees something and it's like, I don't know what this is, it filters it out. It won't let it come aboard the ship.
I do have a question about that.
Yeah,
what if, like,
sure,
they were bringing back, like, samples of something? Like, wouldn't they have to program that in? Because it would be like, sorry.
So that has happened in Star Trek, where they're bringing back something and the transporter tries to filter it out. But there is a manual override. And we've seen like Chief O'Brien do it. Okay. Like he can beep and boop the panel and basically override the transporter.
I don't know if Kyle can do that.
And I don't know if he knows how to beep and boop that well yet. He might still be in beep and boop in school. I don't know.
Anyway, just a quick thing. Every time they say Kyle on any of these episodes, it makes me think of Kyle from the Netflix She-Ra series.
Oh, how funny.
So, you know, listen to She-Ra and the Podcast of Power, like four episodes that we have, if you ever want to.
I know. That was such a good show. I enjoyed that show a lot.
You enjoyed that show. Yeah. We podcasted about
it. I know. I still love that show. I actually was thinking about rewatching it again because how much I just like rewatch all the seasons again because I loved it so much. So Hemmer tells her that when they were getting like refitted, when they were in dry dock, that the pattern buffers and the filters were all new and upgraded. So he's like, there's really no way it let something through that it shouldn't have let through. Clearly she's like not really convinced. So he like says, fine, I will run a ship-wide level 5 diagnostic. He tells her it's probably going to take like all night to do it just to, you know, just to rule it out. So briefly, Una's able to connect with Pike. She updates him on what's going on, but, you know, their communication once again cut off by the ion storm. So she starts doing some research on the Illyrians and their genetic modifications and specifically for disease control. And Lon comes in. She briefs her on the situation. Basically, like, as a security risk, you need to, like, have your eyes out for, like, what's going on. And they talk about Lon's heritage and her relation to Khan. And here's where I think we get a little bit sticky. And I don't mean to nitpick, but it's a little bit of a nitpick. So we're saying in this show that Lon is a descendant of Khan Noonien Singh, who the Enterprise crew under Kirk will meet years later when they find the Botany Bay drifting in space. And this is the kind of the hard part about doing like prequels to stuff that's already been established, is when they meet Khan and they figure out his name, Khan Noonien Singh, of course, in that episode, like, Spock has no clue who he is or anything. Like, Spock has to basically Google him and look him up to figure out what the story is, where it's like Spock would have known because La'an is on the ship with him. It's a nitpick. I get it. And it's not like now I'm like, throw the show away. I hate it. It's just, it's a little bit of a nitpick when you're tying her to Khan, and later on down the road, they will meet up with Khan. Like, we all know that. Like, you know, we all know what's going to happen.
Someone mind melded with him and took that out of his brain.
Oh, you know what? Why not? Sure.
I mean, we can whistle past the graveyard on this.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to. It's really a nitpick, and I don't mean to, and I'm not, like, trying to gatekeep or anything, but, like, it's just a little nitpick, and it is, I think, the struggle that happens when you make prequels to stuff. You have to try to make all the dots connect, and you want to try to introduce new stuff, but it can be hard to make those, it can be hard to make it all line up. But having said that, like, the creators and writers of this show, as they have done with a lot of the, like, the Discovery stuff, which is also a prequel to the original series, they're basically like, we're not really too worried about making it line up all the way. So I guess if they're not too worried, we shouldn't be too worried about it. So, you know, she talks about, like, how she was bullied as a kid. Although here in this scene, she kind of presents it like the kids teased her. And then later on, it's revealed to be much more cruel than just teasing. And Una, and I, you know, this is where we start to get, like, some foreshadowing for, like, the big reveal later on. Una's telling her, like, well, you know, maybe you should avoid passing snap judgments on all genetic manipulation, just because some of it didn't go right doesn't mean all of it doesn't go right. And then we see Lon, like, place her hand on this lighted panel, and her hand kind of turns a little bit red, and then she's, like, immediately infected, and she's like, I need more light, and she's, like, sticking her face right in the lamp, and I never knew how many lamps were on the Enterprise until this episode. There are a lot of lamps on the Enterprise.
Do you expect them to walk around in the dark, Rebecca?
I know. I'm just surprised how many desk lamps exist on the Enterprise. I never knew until this episode. So, of course, Dr. Mbenga examines her. They don't understand how it's spreading because she wasn't part. She doesn't understand. They don't understand why it's spreading. She wasn't on the landing party. But they decide to issue a ship-wide lockdown to try to contain the spread of this thing. Non-essential people are going to be confined to quarters, and that anybody who's on duty, they're going to base. So they're basically doing, like, what we've all gone through in our own pandemic. Like, you know, stay at home, 6 feet apart, that kind of thing, to try to contain this disease. So, back on the planet, Pike and Spock are continuing to examine the journals. Spock discovers that this particular colony, this group of Valerians, they wanted to join the Federation. And to do so, they were actually trying to reverse the genetic engineering on themselves so that they could qualify to potentially join the Federation, which is actually a pretty interesting... It's a pretty interesting thing to do. We see the storm is getting closer, and then we see, like, I'm calling them, like, storm ghosts, because that's what they looked like. Like, they looked like these ghostly figures, spirits in the storm, and they seem to be moving toward the building. So, again, when you were first watching this episode, when you saw this happen, like, did you have an idea of, so, like, we know the big reveal is that these, you know, ghostly figures are actually the colonists. Did you kind of suspect that when you first watched this, or was that reveal kind of a big surprise for you?
That was a surprise for me. I had no idea.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't even read the synopsis for this episode, and I'm glad that I didn't, because, you know, it basically tells you kind of like which character to kind of focus on. So I had no idea. Are we past the point where, like, they turn off the lights or something? Like, somebody turns off a light and, like, two guys get all pissed off because...
Oh, that's actually coming up. Yeah, that's a pretty funny scene. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
I have to... I'm sorry, Brooke, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, the whole thing where he's like... oh, this lightning didn't kill the colonists, it is the colonists kind of thing. It was like, the fuck? Run that by me again? Like, again, no clue.
Okay.
No clue.
I have to be honest, when they saw these figures moving close to them, I was like, oh, it's the colonists. And it's only because it's a thing that's been in so many Star Trek episodes. I am not smart. It's because I'm dumb and I watch a lot of the same shit over and over that I was like, oh, it's the colonists.
Yeah, again, I had no idea that these were the colonists. I was just thinking, like, these are like, they just, I don't know, they just, I was like, are they look like, electrified ring wraiths or something flying around. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, they definitely had a ring wraith appearance to them, for sure. So, now we're up to the scene where you were just talking about Brian. Uhura is asleep in her bunk. And I kind of like that they're using the bunks that are in lower decks here, which I kind of enjoyed that a little bit.
I've never watched Lower Decks yet. Sorry.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine. No, that's fine.
But I loved that. I was like, oh, this is so cool, because it was for me, like, that, I would have loved that. Like, especially as a kid, I would have been like, yes, I want my own little, like, bunk. And, I mean, now I'm kind of like, the way I have my bedroom set up now, it's kind of in a little, it's kind of self-made alcove. But, you know, I'm like, that's great. Sorry.
Yeah, it definitely sort of has that feel of, like, a Navy ship where, like, you know, several sort of lower classmen are sharing a room and everyone's got a bunk. But this, it has a sliding panel, gives you privacy in your bed, which is nice. So she wakes up and her roommates are like, they are running some kind of a simulation or something where there was a giant ball of light in the middle of the room. And they're like having some, I don't know, pagan festival, like worship thing around it. They're just like standing in front of this light. And when she like turns off the simulation and they turn around all angry, like, why'd you turn off the light? They're like straight up sunburned from light exposure. Like that's how long they stood in front of it, which was, it was kind of a funny scene when you think about it.
It's like, for me, it reminded me of like every 80s movie when somebody walks into the bathroom and like two people are doing coke in there and they get caught.
Yeah.
And the only thing that was missing in this entire episode was, fucking the dude from Anchorman who says I love lamb.
Oh my god, yes. that was hilarious. Yes. Yeah, like they're like straight up sunburned from the exposure to this light. So they bring them to sick bay, which is quickly filling up, to the point that Dr. Mbenga said he had to open up another part of sick bay, like to basically overflow with these patients. And clearly, like, they cannot figure out how this thing is being spread because the contact tracing doesn't add up. Like, she's in the same room with them, but she didn't catch it. Somebody catches it, and they are, like, nowhere near anybody that had it. So, like, they have no clue how this thing is spreading.
You know, like, this is supposed to be in the future, but then it sort of, because we're in a pandemic, gives you a little, like, twitchy vibes because it's like contact tracing and you need to stay far apart and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, ugh.
I know. It's every time now I watch something that's got like the elements of like what we've gone through with COVID, it does kind of make my skin crawl a little bit because I'm like, oh, this is too real. Stop showing me this. and definitely like this episode, and I've seen it compared on Twitter by other people, it definitely has a feel for like some of those classic episodes of like The Naked Now, you know, the one where everybody like catches a thing and makes them act like they're drunk. They did in the original series and in Next Generation. It definitely has that feel-ish about it. Obviously very different symptoms, but, you know, not being able to, they couldn't figure out right away how this thing was being spread either. So Hammer comes into sick bay and he's still running his diagnostic. And I love how they've written this character. He's so grumpy and I kind of love that about him. He's just like this grumpy guy where Una asks him, like, did you find anything? And he's like, yeah, that's why I'm still walking around the ship in the middle of the night. Cause I'm having fun.
He's like the anti-Geordi.
Yes, he's like the anti-Geordi, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
He's even just if grumpy. Geordi doesn't want to be, like, hanging around all night working, he'll be like, well, Captain, it's going to take me all night.
Then again, Geordi is a mechaphile, and he would probably just love being up in the middle of the night, just walking around the Enterprise.
He just loves it.
Just, like, rubbing his hands on the panel, I love you, Enterprise. that's weird. So
it's been a while since we've had a Geordi in the Enterprise reference.
It has been a while since we have had that. I do miss our Geordi moments, but so he tells Dr. Mbenga he needs to check his emergency medical transporter to see if that had anything to do with the transporter issue. Make sure it's like. He wants to check that it's been integrated and it's been upgraded, etc. And then Dr. Mbenga, it gets very upset. And he's like, nope, you can't go in there. I have research. And don't you see I have a sick bay full of people? This is the worst time to be doing this. And we see Hammer, like, checking the transporters. And he's like checking stuff and it makes the lights go out. And he's like, that shouldn't have happened. And finally, like, the doctor, like, just gets so upset that Hammer's like, all right, I get it. This is a bad time. I'll come back later or whatever. But clearly, again, sort of setting up another reveal towards the end of the episode here. And then we see him, like, very, like, surreptitiously, he, like, turns the lights back on. And I love that this is, like, meant to be an older ship, so of course it has, like, the toggle switches and, like, actual tactile stuff rather than just, like, touch screens like we see, like, in Next Gen. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, for me, when I was watching it the first time, I thought Mbenga was, like, thinking that, Hammer had been infected and that he was going to mess up the things because of that at first. Mm-hmm. And then when we get to the scene where he is, it's like, yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I thought he just was doing something to make it seem like, you know, like when he hit the light switch, like maybe he had turned the lights off to make it seem like there was actually something happening. So again, I did not expect what happened in the end.
Yeah, I did not either. I have to say, for me, the reveal, and we'll talk more about it when we get there, but, like, the reveal of what's going on with the medical transporter, I did not care for it. Because it doesn't make sense, and we'll talk more about it. So Una and Uhura are going to try to recreate, like, how she managed to avoid contracting the disease. They go to her quarters. Una, like, gets in her bunk and she's like, okay, you were laying down, you were sleeping, whatever. And Uhura tells her, I had the door closed. I have to have pitch black, like, to sleep. I can't have any lights on. So she closes the screen and she realizes that she was in the dark and that's how she did not catch the disease because there was no light there. And that's where they sort of figure out how the disease is moving around. Like, it travels on light waves, which is a pretty interesting thing. Like, you don't usually think of a disease being able to do that. And Dr. Mbenga says that the virus triggers the pleasure center of the brain when exposed to light. So that's why people are seeking out the light, because it makes them feel good. They're basically addicted to the light. And that's what Christine Chappell says when Una's like, well, let's just turn off all the lights. she's like, we've got a sick bay full of light addicts. Like, that's not going to be good for them. And that's when they decide that they'll sedate everybody that is sick to keep them asleep so that they can turn all the lights off and hopefully keep the disease from spreading further. So then Una goes to continue her research about the Illyrians. Everything is marked as classified, which she overrides. And she's reading this information about the genetic modifications for disease control. And then the computer alerts her that there's a blackout override in the transporter room. She goes down there, and Hemmer is trying to transport up a piece of the planet's mantle, like the actual core of the planet, which is odd that he was... I guess it just doesn't matter how it materialized, because they couldn't bring up Pike and Spock because they said, well, you know, who knows what'll materialize? Like, it won't be like a person. But he's trying to transport up a piece of the mantle because he wants to feel the radiance on his skin. And it's like 10,000 degrees, which Una's like, that will kill you, so please don't do that. She stuns him. She stops the transport. And then, yeah, this is where she picks him up like a rag doll and walks him down to sick bay. And, yeah, which was like just a walk. Like, she just picked him up and walked him down. And I'm like, how can she do this? What? Like, how did she get this power? I know. She's the Hulk now? Like, what happened? How did she...
What happened to the She-Hulk
trailer? This is the She-Hulk series, everybody. You just watched the episode.
I mean, she ripped her shirt. She carried a guy.
Oh my god, she is She-Hulk.
She looked really gigantic carrying him down the hall.
So, back on the planet, Spock and Pike, they've barricaded the doors because these ghostly creatures are trying to get in. But they are continuing to sort of just try to force their way through the door. Spock keeps reading these journals, and he finds that the colonists became infected with a disease and that they started to report these creatures, but that the creatures never did them any harm. They were just sort of there. As the ion storm increases and is basically on top of them, the pressure builds up in the room. Pike says his ears start to pop. And that's when these creatures like bust into the room and they basically cover, they like form like a bubble over Spock and Pike, and it protects them from the storm. And then once the storm begins to dissipate, these creatures just leave. And so I have to say, like, I kind of like how we had two different stories going on in this episode. Like, I liked how we had, like, the infection episode on the ship, and then we have the part on the planet where, like, Spock is investigating. And even, like, later on, he tells, or in this scene, he tells Pike that he's arming them with knowledge, right? Like, he's, like Pike is like, is that a phaser? Like, can it stun those things? And he's like, I am arming us with knowledge. I'm trying to figure out what these things are and how we could stop them or protect ourselves, whatever. I did enjoy, like, the sort of two storylines happening, because it was really talking about the same thing, except that, like, we as the audience, like, we see that they're really investigating the same thing, but of course they don't know that. And it was kind of neat to see how they each were investigating a different aspect of, like, what happened on this planet, especially, like, with this disease as well that ravaged the colony. Back on the ship, Dr. Mbenga tells Una and Nurse Chapel that he is now infected and will need to be sedated. And this is where we get, like, the first big reveal in the episode, where Una says that she is Illyrian and that her immune system fought off the disease because it was bioengineered to do that. So what did you guys think about this reveal where she reveals that she's not human, but she's Illyrian and she's been genetically engineered.
I'm glad that this came up because I was wondering how in the world. First off, I was wondering how in the world she picked up Hemmer earlier, mm-hmm. and this explains it. Is that something? Is like that strength something that comes from her Illyrian, you know, race, species, or whatever, or is it something that because of the bioengineering?
I believe it's from the bioengineering.
Yeah, so that explained that. I was glad that came back because like that they revealed this because I had no idea how she was able to do that, and I thought it brought with it some really cool, interesting moments between her and Pike. I really liked that, and then I think you know her conversation with Pike even affected her next conversation with what's his name, the doctor
Mbanga.
Mbanga. I think it kind of carried over there too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I liked it. I liked it quite. I liked this reveal quite a bit.
Yeah. I like the reveal. It wasn't as surprising as her picking Hemmer though. It's like, oh, you know, everything sort of fell into place then.
Mm-hmm.
Why she probably turned red and why she was able to carry him around and all that kind of thing. And yeah, like, it's like, it's the final piece of the puzzle, and you could see the picture. So, but it, yeah, no, I liked it.
Yeah, it's the same here. I liked that, I liked the reveal. And it's interesting because I was, in doing research for the episode, I had found that in beta canon, in some of the Star Trek novels, it had been written that number one was not human. That was established that she was not human, but that they had never really set her race before. So this was sort of the big this was like the big reveal that she's not actually human, she's of a different species, and that she's also biogenetically she's been engineered to be the way that she is. And of course, like, this brings up a lot of problems for her, right? Because the Federation has outlawed bioengineering. They've outlawed genetic mutations because of their experience with the eugenics wars. So she's had to hide all of this. She's had to lie about who she is and what she is to be a part of Starfleet. So, I mean, her first thought is, you know, use my blood to synthesize a cure, an antidote to this. And Mbanga says it's not going to work that way because the way her body fights off a disease is that it literally burns the disease away and it leaves no antibodies. So very differently than like how like humans would combat a virus when their immune system encountered it. He's like, the only way it would have worked was...
I wish that I glowed whenever that happened.
I know!
It'd be fun.
I would like to glow as well when I'm fighting off a cold or something.
Although if it took a while and you were trying to sleep, it might, you know...
True.
Might be glowing too much. I don't...
He tells her the only way it would have worked was if he was there, like at the moment that she was infected and he could have, you know, maybe possibly been able to get a sample and do something with it. And they kind of talk a little bit about like, you know, how awkward this must be for her to be in Starfleet, but be so different, be an Illyrian. And she tells him that Starfleet is right about a lot of things, but not about everything, and certainly not about the Illyrians. And he talks a little bit about, like, the prejudices that have kept people from helping each other for centuries. You know, he's like, you know, first, you know, when we first went out into the stars, it was Vulcan and human blood. Now it's Illyrian and human blood. And he says, you know, as a doctor, like, he doesn't care about regulations or any kind of prejudices. If your blood could do something, I would beg you to help us. And while this is going on, we kind of get this really cool shot of, like, Nurse Chapel. She's like working in sick bay, and we see La'an wake up. But because she's like, because she is who she is, she doesn't just like wake up. She like sits straight up like a zombie, and she's like, "I'm up." And while
the first
this is
time,
all going,
I didn't even catch who it was. I just saw the color of her shirt and was like, you know, because I was paying attention to the foreground, not the background. And then it's like, oh, shit, somebody got up.
Yeah. It was on second watch that I was like, oh, it was, that's how Una knew it was La'an. So I'm like, how'd you know it was her? And then it's when I saw that it was La'an that sat up and she was obviously awake. And of course, since she's affected with this disease and she's a light addict, she is not happy that sickbay is so dark. So she knocks out Nurse Chapel and goes off to find something really bright so that she can satisfy her addiction. And Una finds her in engineering. She is trying to cause a warp core breach. And, which is not the smartest thing to do at all. They fight. It was a pretty good fight scene here, but they fight. And La'an is pissed. She's pissed that Una has hidden her Illyrian modifications from her all these years. You know, she's like, you say you're my friend, but you've lied to me all of these years. You're an augment. And she's like, and that's what the kids called me when I was little. They called me augment. They called me freak. So we see, like, it was more than just teasing. Like, she was straight up bullied when she was little for being who she is and for being related to Khan and all of those genetically engineered people. So we see the containment field is beginning to fall. There's radiation everywhere. And once again, we see Una glow. But she's kind of like, she's kind of straddling La'an because she's just knocked her out. So she glows red. And it seems like La'an glows red a little bit too. And then like the scene cuts to something else. So it ends up, and I have to say, on first watch, I kind of felt like they yada yada'd past how they cured the disease, because it was like Dr. Mbenga was like, no, there's no way your blood can help us. And then suddenly it's like, oh, we found a cure. Everybody's okay. And I was like, what? What do you mean? How did that happen? But on second watch, I guess I was paying more attention. They do explain that when Una became exposed to the radiation, her body fought it off, we saw it do earlier. But because she was, like, so close to La'an, it cured her as well. La'an's body then manufactured antibodies, as humans do, and then from that, they synthesized a cure. So I don't know about you guys, but I felt like, even though they did explain how it happened, how they were able to get a cure, I felt like, I still kind of feel like they yada yada'd past it a little bit. Like, they spent a lot of time talking about the development of the disease and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're awake. We found a cure. Everything's great.
Only so many minutes in an episode, Rebecca.
No, I know that. Yes.
No, I really do wish that more TV shows would do, like, not necessarily this has to be 22 minutes, this has to be 47 minutes or whatever, like that, because there are some shows that have been like on Netflix where it might be a little shorter, a little longer. Some of these Disney Plus series kind of have a range of times, and I think that helps the episodes to, you know, breathe. But also it is Star Trek. And there's plenty of times where they kind of yada yada past things after they've already, like, techno-babbled about something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like maybe it's the pacing or whatever, but I don't know. I felt like it was a little rushed to me. Even though this episode didn't feel like particularly long or particularly short, it just felt like they kind of rushed past it a little bit. I don't know. Did you have any thoughts about that, Brian? Like, did that occur to you, or did you feel differently?
On first watch, I thought it went by pretty quickly, and I didn't really maybe like process the whole how they came up with the antidote until the second watch. Now, my main question here is, after we see Una glowing, and what's her name? Is it Lon?
Mm-hmm.
And she's, you know, and we see Lon glow as well, which I caught on the second watch because I knew, you know, kind of like what was going on here. Are we led to believe that how much time passes from the time, from that time until the point that they're aware that there was an antidote made? Because in the interim, I think, like, we don't know how much time really passed in between, right?
Right. Because it cuts to, like, sorry, I was just coughing. It cuts to, like, them waking up in Benga, and Una's like, everything's okay. We found a cure. And then the nurse, like, explains how they found the cure.
I think that's kind of, like, why I let it slide upon my second viewing, is the fact that we don't know how long they were out. And so, you know, just like they're unaware that an antidote was made and this was – been created, we're finding that out as well. And mm-hmm. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at with it, because I don't really know how much time passed there, but I do see your complaint. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, of course, they solve the problem. This is Star Trek, and everybody's going to cure it and everybody's going to be fine. Back on the planet, though, so Spock breaks down basically how he has deduced that the creatures they saw in the storm are the colonists. And because the journals talk about the disease that these colonists had, it's the same disease that was on the Enterprise. They were attracted to light, and that there were cases of the colonists running into the storm, chasing the lightning. Like, they wanted to, like, have, like, feel the lightning. And he said that when they died in the ion storms, that the charged storm particles somehow bonded with their electromagnetic presence, creating these storm ghost things. So I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. I mean, I get it. Like, sort of like in that second that they died, they became like this other creature. And they lived in the storms now, and that's why they couldn't protect the colonists, because they were the colonists. Like, anybody who didn't die that way probably would have found other ways to die, because they were, like, obsessed with feeling light and heat on their skin. And Spock was like, you know, these Illyrians, that some of them were engineered to fight diseases, and that by undoing these modifications in the effort to join Starfleet, it got them killed. And it's interesting because, I mean, clearly Una seems to be one of those Illyrians who was engineered to fight diseases. We see her body fight off anything it comes in contact with instantly. It just kills it, so it doesn't infect her or make her sick. So we get a scene where Una goes to talk with La'an. And Lon is still upset. She's angry with her because, you know, the stuff that these augments did during the eugenic wars led to, you know, her being an innocent party in all of this. She just happens to be a descendant of one of the most notorious. She was prejudged for being different and weird and maybe even dangerous. And here is another person who is a friend in her life, somebody who they've been close for a while now, who is genetically engineered, is modified, and never shared that with her. And Lon feels like, you know, you've lied to me all these years, and she does feel hurt by that. And then Una kind of talks about why the Illyrians would use genetic modification. She was like, rather than terraform a planet, we would like terraform ourselves to live in an environment, because we are not motivated by domination, whereas like these other augments were motivated by domination. But they seem to make up. They seem to kind of at least be able to try to put this behind them and still be friends. So Pike is back on board. Una tells him everything, and she says she's going to resign from Starfleet, and that she'll, you know, go back to Earth and face court-martialing, because she, again, lied to get into the Federation, and she shouldn't get into Starfleet, and that in theory she really shouldn't be serving on board a ship. Pike basically won't accept her resignation. He basically talks about how he learned on the planet that the Illyrians were very misunderstood, and that he had like a lot of preconceived ideas about them and about their genetic modifications, but that he learned that that wasn't all true, and that her actions proved that she obviously has the best interest of her crew. And he tells her, I'll deal with Starfleet. I'll take the heat, basically. You know, I'm not going to let you get prosecuted and give up your commission. And he tells her, you know, it seems like the transporter's biofilters had an issue here. Let's get that fixed, make sure this never happens again. And this is when we get, like, the second big reveal of the episode, where basically... Okay, so Dr. Mbenga has a kid, and his daughter has some terrible terminal disease. It's going to kill her pretty quickly. So he's been keeping her in the transporter buffer of his emergency medical transporter. So this is my issue. I have no problem with the story point, like... It's an interesting aspect to this character, but it doesn't make any sense. Like, I felt like this was something they should have revealed to us, even if they didn't reveal to the crew, reveal it to us, the audience, in episode one. Show us this thing right away, that we know it's there. Instead, it's just sort of like plopped into this episode at the end, for like another shocking reveal. And like, what's gonna happen? And we've seen them use the emergency transporter in the first episode. Like, his daughter was in the buffer at that point too. Like, how did, I don't know. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me. I felt like this should have been something revealed to us much earlier on in this, like episode one. At the end, kind of throw it in there as like, oh my gosh, there's a thing happening there. I don't know. I didn't care for it as the way it was revealed. Does that make sense what I'm saying? And what did you guys think? Like, did you think of this sort of second surprise in the episode?
I thought it was weird.
It is weird.
But, you know, whoa. What do you always bring up, Spock's brain? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, Spock's brain.
You know, sometimes it's weird.
Would it work just fine if people weren't infected with something? I'm just curious. I'm trying to understand.
So, I mean, I guess it would, because he says... I mean, They did this in an episode of Next Generation, Relics, right? Where they brought Scotty in.
Yeah.
Because, right, like Scotty and some other guy were on the ship. He was going to this colony for his retirement. The ship gets trapped somewhere, and Scotty puts himself and the other guy into the transporter buffer, and then locks the transporter into like a diagnostic mode so that their patterns will never degrade. But then, of course, they rematerialize him, and we get Scotty in an episode of Next Gen. Okay, so I understand the science of it, science, quote-unquote, of this. I think it does seem... I think it would work just fine if without this disease issue. But it's like, and he says, like, you just have to materialize the person every you know, regularly so that their pattern doesn't degrade. My issue is, like, just with the timing of it. I just felt like this was just something dumped in our laps at the end of the episode, and I just felt oddly placed to me. And I get they had to give a reason why the transporter did what it did, and it was because his transporter was not upgraded. Because if they upgraded it, they would have seen the pattern and been like, what is this? You can't have a pattern in the buffer, and then, like, his secret would have been exposed.
And it was kind of strange, I feel like, because it's such a big thing, and it's probably never going to come back.
That is also my issue. Is this going to come back? I feel like it's not going to ever come back. And we'll just always know that his daughter's in the transporter. Like, but they'll never address it again.
Well, the thing is, it's like, I thought it was kind of weird that they showed her and him together at the end of the episode. Like, that actor is clearly going to age, depending on how long they want this show to go on. So they'll have to recast.
Right.
So it was kind of an odd choice to show her. I see exactly what you're saying, and I think that they could have easily solved this, even if they didn't let us know as an audience that he was specifically hiding his daughter. They could have showed us in a couple previous episodes just him kind of like sneaking around the pattern buffer and, you know, like checking things out, and we're like, you know, somebody walks in, hey, what are you doing? Oh, nothing. You know, just something to, like, lead us down this road, because, yeah, this is something that they're just literally dropping on us and giving us, like, just the smallest bit of exposition on, like, you know, like, oh, this should have been corrected, blah, 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 you know? So I get what you're saying.
Well, he does say, before we see him in there, like, going to read to her or whatever, he's like, well, let me just have this last, you know, because the way he sounds, it's like, when he's talking to Una, it's like, oh, well, if I'm going to have to stop doing this, I might as well have one more time with her before I let her out and her illness takes her.
Right, because he says, I can't sacrifice everybody on this crew for one life, which... I mean, as a parent, like, that's like an incredibly impossible decision. Like, I understand his motivation as a parent. Like, I want to do everything to preserve my daughter's life, but at what expense? Like, what if something happens again with the transporter? And because my transporter is, like, not up to date with all the other ones, it causes another problem like this again. So I understood that, but I do think that they could have easily, as you said, Brian, like, dropped in clues before this to then make this reveal make more sense and feel more organic.
Yeah, like us as an audience being like, oh, that's what he's been sneaking around doing and we weren't privy to. Instead of just, like, this coming, it felt like it did come out of nowhere. Like, there was an A story, you know, on the ship. There's a B story on the planet. And then there was, like, this really weird C story out of nowhere at the very end. And, I mean, you can go back and watch
like
the episode
Z
again.
Story.
Yeah. You can go back and watch the episode again, and you can see why he is treating Hemmer the way he's treating him when, you know, he's checking things out. And in that moment, that specific moment, I thought he was hiding from everybody else that he had been infected. And,
right.
that's what was going on. And so I guess maybe they just wanted to give you another M. Night Shyamalan twist here at the end, you know, especially, you know, they'd already done it with – I mean, why do that again? Because we already had the big twist that Una was Illyrian. Like, you don't need to do that again. But, yeah, I agree with you, Rebecca. They should have done a little more – planted some seeds, done a little bit more groundwork with this whole thing, because I felt like it did not 100% work.
Mm-hmm. Every time we talk about someone saying, like, that they're – oh, they got infected and they didn't want anybody to know, it just makes me think of an episode of Community where they all get, like, infected by this thing that makes them zombie-like. And Britta's like, I thought I was special. And then she all of a sudden has her.
I don't know. It was just very, like, it was just very clumsily handled, and I didn't really care for it. I think I would have, it would have worked better for me if they had planted the seeds and done a little bit of groundwork here, that then this is revealed, then it's like, oh, that's what he's been sneaking around about. Okay, gotcha. Like, but it just, yeah, I mean, we already got a big twist in this episode. So in the Ready Room episode for this one, that's the after show that Wil Wheaton hosts, he spoke to both Rebecca Romijn and Akilah, what's her last name? The writer of this episode, let's pull up her name again, Akilah Cooper. He spoke to both of them. They talked about this reveal about Una being Illyrian, and Rebecca Romijn shared that this will come up again in the series. This is not the last time that will be addressed. And I liked that, because I'm like, okay, you dropped a big reveal about the character. It would feel weird to never go back to it. And she confirmed that they will go back to it, that this is not the last time it's going to come up. There will be more fallout or more, I guess, consequences or whatever that she has to deal with. And that makes sense to me, but I do feel like this reveal that Dr. Mbenga is keeping his daughter in the transporter, I just feel like, are we ever going to come back to it? And if we do, for what purpose other than, I mean, would she just come back if he's like, oh my God, I found the cure to this incredibly rare disease my kid has. Let me materialize her and give her the cure. Like, that's the only time I would feel like they would bring her back or bring this plot point back.
Why don't you give him other interesting things to do?
Mm-hmm.
Instead, am I making sense here?
Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely.
It's like they're trying to add some layer to this character when, I mean, you can do that in other ways as opposed to this, because you're right, like, okay, I mean, maybe we get one more episode and they think they find a cure for her and it doesn't quite work. And so then we're left with that. And then maybe he eventually does find a cure for her. Like, that's the only way the story can go. And I don't find that particularly interesting. Give him some other interesting storylines. You know, I don't know. I agree.
Yeah, because it's like, it's almost like they want to, like, create sympathy for this character and for his daughter. Which I get, like, that's you, and you can do that in a drama. You could do that successfully, creating sympathy and emotion for a character and their difficult struggle. But then to just dump this in our laps,
yeah.
And we know from episode one that Pike and Mbenga know each other for a long time. Like, they are good friends. Like, wouldn't that have been a great moment to be like, oh my gosh, how's your daughter? Like that would have been an organic moment to bring her up and have Mbenga be like uncomfortable discussing it. And you're like, oh, what's going on with that? Like, that would have been a perfect moment to introduce the idea of this plot point or this character development point.
Or just not even do this. Like,
yeah, or just have, not do this.
Have the character already, like, suffering from the loss of a child, and then that characteristic of, like, of a father losing a child could come up in a future episode where someone else is dealing with the same thing, and then he can be kind of like the person that can talk with them and mm-hmm. or the empathetic person that they need for that episode. I mean, there's other things that you can do to make this character interesting other than just throw this, you know, out of nowhere random thing that we never knew about into the episode that just didn't 100%. It was clunky. It just didn't 100% mm-hmm. work.
Yeah, I've seen other people online kind of making the same observation that they didn't care for this. It's just clunky for me. I didn't care for it. But Una does tell him that she will provide a dedicated power source from the warp core write to his transporter to make sure that this never happens again. So basically, like, creating his system would be, like, independent from the other transporters, which, again, does not make a lot of sense because they're not telling Captain Pike about this. How are they going to keep this a secret? At some point, isn't someone in engineering going to be like, hey, what is this one? Where is this power going? Why is this power diverted? Like, that's what a good engineer would do. I just don't see how they can keep this going for any period of time that it makes sense. Like, I guess that might be when they might bring this up again, and Pike being like, hey, what's going on with my ship? Why are you diverting power for this thing? Like, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense.
I think they just – here's the thing. I think that they're just laying out – and I think not just the writers here, but I think a lot of different, you know, TV shows, even Marvel, they'll, like, throw out these – not even – just these story points that, and they don't button them up completely. And they're just like, if we can't think of something to write for the next episode, we can always go back to this. It's kind of like a little lifeline for down the road. If they're having writer's block or something, it's like, oh, what do we need to button up? Oh, remember that one plot thread that we kind of like never, you know, finished? In that one episode, let's do something with that. Yeah, okay, we've planted some seeds there. I think, you know, and or they can choose not to. I mean, I remember watching Doctor Strange, and then like the one book is missing at Kamar-Taj, and we're like, what's up with that one missing book? Are they ever going to get back to that? You know, and you know, they eventually. I'm talking like five years later. Now they have. But and this might be the same thing. Like later on down the road, okay, we need a story. Ah, yeah, let's get back to Mbenga's story here.
Yeah,
and you know we'll button this up.
Yeah, that I think that's really smart. What you're saying is it leaves it open to then just sort of go back to this as a plot device. If they need an episode and they don't know what to write for it, they can do something with this. So I guess we'll see what happens if they ever go back to it, but whatever, his daughter's in the transporter buffer and he materializes her every so often and reads her a story. So that's a thing that's happening in the show. It's a thing that's happening in this show. So we end the episode with another first officer's log. It's Una's personal log. And she talks about the lights are back on, but people are still hiding things. And we see Dr. Mbenga reading a story to his daughter. And I actually think this log that she's recording, I think is really kind of what the episode was trying to do the whole time. And certainly, like, the writer of the episode on the Ready Room, she talked about this, about, like, stereotypes and preconceived notions about people, where Una says, you know, Pike was very understanding and he's going to fight for her, but that she still feels bad because she's like, what if I hadn't been able to save all those people? What if I wasn't the hero of this particular story? Would he still fight for me this hard because I'm one of the quote unquote good ones? Is it not just enough for me to exist and be who I am? And I thought, like, this was kind of like, sort of like the heart of this story was about having preconceived notions about people and stereotypes about people, and then learning that that's not always true. And then she deletes the log entry, which I understand because, you know, even though it's her personal log, you know, Starfleet can access your personal logs. And if they hear this log, I mean, she's basically condemning herself. She's admitting who she is and what she is and that she's been engineered. And they can use it against her if they want to prosecute her ever at some point. Because now it's a log entry, even if it's a personal log. And it kind of reminded me of that episode of Deep Space Nine In the Pale Moonlight, where the whole episode is like Ben Sisko recording a personal log about how basically he was involved in a plot to assassinate somebody so that he could get the Federation into the Dominion War, and then he deletes the log entry after he gets it out.
It's such a great episode.
I think this closing scene, this closing log, was probably like my favorite part of the whole episode. I thought it really summed up really well what the writers were trying to say about stereotypes and kind of like what Una was saying about how the Federation is right about a lot of things, but not about everything. And the fact that they've sort of unilaterally banned genetic engineering, like, you understand the reasoning why, but this unilateral ban also shouldn't always apply to everybody and every situation. And I always love a Star Trek episode where they kind of point out the flaws of the Federation, even though, like, it's supposed to be like a utopia, a perfect as we can be society. I do like when they sort of point out the cracks in the system of, like, it's not always the best thing to do. But yeah, for me, I this last log entry, this last scene was, I think, for me, the best scene of the episode. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I have a question.
Yes?
So, if Laan is directly descended from Khan, then wouldn't she be, or is it that, like the other people, all of them get genetically modified, not just you take those characteristics when you're born from your parents when they were genetically modified? Like, I was just trying to figure out how there could be a difference where one of them could be in Starfleet legally and one of them
couldn't. I think that's a great question, and I found myself asking that as well. Like, well, wouldn't she have genetically superior genes because that's how Khan was engineered? But I don't know if that's something that in this world the science says it passes down to your kids, etc. Or is it that she's so far removed it's been, like, quote-unquote diluted? I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that question. Because it doesn't make a lot of sense if you think about it. Like, in theory, she should not have been allowed to join Starfleet either. And she's not lying about who she is. Like,
yeah, I'm glad that you felt the same way about that. Because I was just like, I don't understand. I guess if it's just been passed down through her heritage, then it's different because she can't help that.
Mm-hmm.
But Una, maybe they, maybe, you know, they acknowledge that they're going to, you know, hey, you're 5 years old, you're going to get injected with this and it's going to make you super strong. And she's like, sure, you know, consented to it or something, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they had an episode of Deep Space Nine where they revealed that Dr. Bashir had been genetically altered, like, as a young child, or I think as a teenager it happened. Like, his parents were basically like, our kid is not as smart as he could be. Like, he struggles with, I think they said like he had, like, maybe some learning disability issues or whatever. He was basically lagging behind. So they took him off Earth to some planet that's, like, outside the Federation, and they got him genetically altered, and it made him, like, super smart, which is why he was able to, like, sort of, like, graduate Starfleet at the head of his class. And then, like, once it all came, like, but he knew about it, but he also knew he was supposed to keep it a secret. It does come out at some point, and, like, Starfleet kind of makes an exception for him because he had done so much good on Deep Space Nine, and he had helped so many people. They kind of, like, said, all right, you're already here, we'll let you stay. But this obviously takes place, like, long before Deep Space Nine, but yeah, I don't know. I think they're leaving it very open as a loophole to basically be like, I think they were so desperate to I think they were so eager to connect a character here to another legacy character like Khan that they're sort of just like, don't worry about the details, just she's Khan's descendant. Like, I think that's really what they were going for here.
I mean, you know, we haven't really seen her be like super duper Soldier Serum kind of esque person.
Right.
You know? So, like, if it was just passed down through genetics at that point, then maybe it's not as strong, but it's just kids are still make fun of her because they obviously know who she is because of her name.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, if I had to guess, I would say, like, she's so far removed from Khan that, like, whatever genetic augmentation was done to him, and then, like, his descendants would marry, let's just say, non-genetically altered people, like, eventually, like, I guess we'd become, like, a recessive gene. I don't know. I'm not a geneticist. I'm just saying things. Yeah, but it's definitely a good question. It's a very good question.
Someone needs to tell us.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, someone tell us. Would a geneticist please tell us? Someone please tell us what happened. Yeah, so that's our episode. I have to say, so, like, of the three episodes we've seen, and obviously there's going to be, you know, many more to come, but, like, of the three episodes we've gotten, this one is not my favorite. I didn't, like, dislike it. There's a lot to like here. There's a lot of sort of tropey Trek stuff that happens that I enjoy. But overall, not my favorite of this season so far. But again, didn't hate it.
I'll jump in.
Yeah, of course. Please do.
Yeah, out of the three episodes that I've watched of this series so far, this was my least favorite. But I still liked, I think it kind of came together at the end for me a lot better than I thought it was going to.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely loved the first episode and I fucking adored the second.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this was my least favorite so far, but if this is the worst of a, let's say if this is the worst episode they're going to give me this season, I'll gladly take it over half of the stuff that I watch on the on a regular basis.
Agreed. Yeah, if this is the worst quote-unquote episode we get out of Strange New Worlds, I'm still going to love this series for, way more than a lot of other stuff I've watched. Agreed. Yeah.
Didn't like this as much as the other ones. But it's like there were parts that I really like. Kind of like last week, I feel like if Uhura's story hadn't have been so good and so well played, I wouldn't have liked that one as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like everything came together in that one to make it good for me. But yeah, like this one, it was just like, oh, here's this piece of the puzzle. I lost the original one and I just cut one out of the newspaper or something.
Yeah.
Slide it on in here. It's okay. It's just a piece for the straight edge. It's no big deal.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think episode two, the fact that it focused so much on Uhura and we got so much backstory on like this legacy character, I loved it so much. I mean, just for that alone, I loved it. And I do enjoy how, like, each episode seems like they're going to focus on a different person that's also, like, sort of very classic Trek, like, or I should say classic Next Generation Trek, where, each episode might heavily feature one character over the others just to sort of give them their own story arc. But yeah,
I feel like throwing in the bit with the doctor at the end and his daughter took away from it being Una's story.
Yeah, I think they try to connect it as like, oh look, we were both hiding things, but now we're not as much. And okay, sure, why not? But it does take away from her story. I think if they were going to do this, why not make it part of like a Dr. Mbenga episode? where we focus on him and his yeah. story, and then we go, oh wow, that's really interesting. And but again, if this is the worst that we get from this show, it's okay. It's absolutely fine.
Absolutely.
Because yeah, 100%. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about that we didn't cover, or some other plot point you'd like to go back to?
Real quick, I love Captain Pike's dry humor.
Mm-hmm.
It, I mean, for me, it hits. Like, they're looking at the ion storm, and Pike he's like, this place is fun. They should sell tickets. And I'm just like, I'm just like, that's what I love. That's what I love. Just give me that Captain Pike, Anson Mount dry humor every episode, at least one line like that, and that'll keep me happy, because I think he's fucking fantastic.
Oh, I mean, Anson Mount is just great in this. I mean, he's just so good.
I love the leather jackets they were wearing.
I mean, oh my gosh, I forgot to talk about that. Yes,
they were
the jackets.
So cool.
Yes.
And in this episode, you get to see, like, their shoes more, like the boots that they were wearing, that they were selling. The company that made them was selling them for, like, $400.
Yeah.
And I did not, everyone, be proud, I did not get some and put them on my credit card, okay? I was like,
you
I can't
do this. Restrained yourself?
Let's not do this.
So. Yeah, those boots are great. I would love a pair of them, but... not for $400,
and they run narrow, apparently. So I was like, okay, that's another reason for me to just say no.
Yeah.
Close the laptop and back away.
Yeah, I also enjoyed the costumes here. I thought the costumes were great. I love the jackets. Yeah, I definitely enjoy, like, the costume choices that they make for these characters. I like them a lot. Easily, I think, like, the leather jacket look is very cool, and I think you could probably pretty easily cosplay it if you wanted to. And then, actually, just one more quick thing. I did see somebody talking about this on Twitter, and I thought it was a really great point, that what they loved about the character of Una, of Number One, was that it was a woman tweeting this, that she said that when she got into her field of work, it's mostly a male-dominated field, and the advice she got from a lot of people was, like, don't dress too feminine and don't wear nail polish and don't, like, do your hair and, like, in anything special and, like don't do anything to stand out from all the men that you're going to be working with. And something that I really love about what they're doing with Rebecca Romijn's character is, like, she has nail polish. Her hairstyles are different in the episodes. Yes, she wears a uniform like everybody else and that kind of thing. But, like, they are not sort of, like, trying to make her, like, one of the guys in that sense. Like, she is expressing her femininity in different ways, or the ways that she wants to, I guess I should say. And I thought that was a nice little representation thing, a nice little comment on how her character is dressed and the look that she has in the episode. So, yeah, I appreciated that comment by that Twitter person.
That's a good point. It's like, maybe we can show a future where, again, like, this whole episode is about not judging people. Like, maybe just show us a future where women aren't judged by how they want to express themselves, and with the way they dress, with the way they wear their hair. And, you know, maybe I think that's smart. I like that.
Go ahead, Brooke. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I know that they had it on Discovery, but, like, I want there to be more non-binary people that aren't just, like, androgynous.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I wear dresses sometimes, but I don't think of myself as a female, feminine kind of thing. So, I mean, I'm wearing jeans right now, but but you know what I mean? And it's like, it's just because I like fashion and it's fun.
That is also a really great point. I think Star Trek has always tried to be progressive, and I think sometimes they succeed and sometimes they fail. But I absolutely see your point, and I do agree it would be nice to see, like, more non-binary people and maybe expressing themselves however they want to express themselves through their choice of clothes and makeup or nail polish or other like fashion choices. I mean, we have a non-binary character on Discovery, but they're very sort of like, I think they're very androgynous, as you say, like
that race of people that, you know, Riker fell in love with.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're presented as like very androgynous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think what's interesting, and not like to veer away too much from what you're saying about non-binary characters, but like talking about like fashion choices, like we've seen how Una chooses like with her hairstyles and her nail polish. And then we get a scene like from last week with Ortega's in her sort of like casual clothing, and she has a very different style.
Yes.
She's like, yeah. No, go ahead, please.
No, I mean, you know, just because I was saying last week that she was really cute, and I did tell Cindy before she popped up that she has my haircut, and then she goes, she does have your haircut.
She does. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of enjoy that, too, that they're like, oh, these are two women that are on the bridge and they express themselves very differently, but nobody is judging either one of them for those choices. And because it's their style, it's how they express themselves. And that was enjoyable in that sense. So, we always want Star Trek to try to do as best they can with, like, representation for marginalized groups and groups that don't get proper representation on screen. And we'll see, maybe as the show goes on, I mean, certainly perhaps they will introduce a non-binary character or another character.
I mean, that plenty
maybe
of characters
didn't see
that
coming.
Somebody could come up and it'll just be like, you know, oh, here's the whatchamacallit, and then someone will say, oh, they gave me the whatchamacallit.
Right.
You don't have to make a big deal about it.
No, of course. No, you're absolutely right. And just sort of, yes, you're absolutely right. Well, I hope the Star Trek continues to try to do its best to do that. Absolutely. I think that's it for our episode. I want to thank you, Brian, for joining us once again for our breakdown of this episode. Where can people find you or listen to you or interact with you on the interwebs?
Oh, don't interact with me.
don't ever.
Never.
He's like, I'm invisible.
Yeah, exactly. You can find me on a podcast called Pop Culture Leftovers. Me and my co-host Jake, we bring on different guests and we talk about the latest movies and TV shows that are out. And then we have a news section, and then we have a heavy focus on Marvel, DC, and Star Wars in each episode. So yeah, you can check me out on Pop Culture Leftovers.
Awesome. I think a lot of our listeners probably know that, but anybody who doesn't know Pop Culture Leftovers, please do check them out.
I mean, at least a lot of our guests know that.
Yes, a lot of our guests know Pop Culture Leftovers also. And Brooke and I have both recorded with you on PCL, so that's exciting. And awesome. Well, thanks to everybody who listened to our episode. And again, thank you, Brian. It's always to talk to you.
It's
always fun to talk about Star Trek with you. So thanks for coming on with us.
Thank you.
And you got it. So we will see you all next week for episode 4. And until then, keep boldly going where no one has gone before. See ya.
The podcast is hosted by Rebecca and Brooke. You can find us at facebook.com/PicardCast, on twitter.com/ThePicardCast, or email us at PicardCast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and boldly go where no one has gone before.